Hello everyone and welcome to This Nintendo Life, episode 202. My name is NBZ, and it's a bit of palindrome going on there, you know, 202, just like my real name, backwards, same as it is forwards. I always love a good palindrome. It's a fun time. I'm joined by Bally, who doesn't have a palindrome.
I don't have one.
Do you know what Alistair backwards is?
React Salah?
There we go. There we go.
Yeah.
Because my name is just the same.
I don't know why I have that in my head. I didn't even work out. I just remembered.
You just knew it because that's the sort of thing that you would do as a kid when we were younger. We'd just be like, oh, yeah, everyone knows what their name is backwards because that's the sort of thing you do.
Well, when your pal's got a name that is a palindrome, you got to know what your name backwards is.
Exactly.
You can't be left behind here.
Totally. Yeah. It's very, very important. So, hello. We're here. We're talking about video games, Nintendo, and lots of different things. We're on a bit of a time crunch, Bally, potentially, because there's an electric guy who should be here, who isn't here, who might come back, who might turn off my power.
It's a time crunch on top of a time crunch.
Yeah, exactly, because we're like recording early for loads of things, and it's a whole thing. Hopefully, Bally, by September, everything will have calmed down, and we can just play a bunch of video games and take our time and enjoy everything and all the good stuff. But yes, we're here, and we're ready to do stuff. So, Bally, do you want to tell people what the show is going to be today?
Got a two-segment show this week. For the first segment, we're going to go through the Indie World Showcase that was on the other day. Lots of stuff to go through, and we're going to talk a little bit about the games that we have been playing. And then for the second segment, we are going to go through a few of your listener emails that you kindly sent in.
Yes, some good stuff. Finally, we have another presentation to talk about, which is enjoyable. Nintendo announced Indie World Showcase was going to happen, and then it happened. And I think this was a pretty damn good one, all things considered, in terms of...
I think it's hard to think of one that's stronger, honestly. Not that any stand out in my mind, because they all kind of merge together in my head, but like this is the top tier, if not the strongest.
It's pretty good. I think it's definitely speaking to our taste and the sort of things we're excited for and things that have been announced previously that then got exciting, like release dates or is like out today or whatever. But it tends to be the case, I find, with these showcases that usually Nintendo leans a bit more on new stuff. So stuff that people haven't seen before that is going to be coming to Switch and therefore is a bit more, I don't know, not anticipated in the same way, right? A lot of people before these directs are always like, Hollow Knight, Hollow Knight, Hollow Knight, and I'm always like, well, I think at this point that game's big enough to where he'll be in a big daddy direct,
it is.
Right?
I don't think it's impossible that it would be in an indie showcase, but I think it's unlikely. Yeah.
It's games like that, or it's like the sequel to Celeste, or not the sequel, but the next game from Extremely OK Games, which is, I can't remember the name of it, but it's got something with a sword or something. It's going to be like a Zelda-style game, which, that sort of level of indie, for me, is probably more likely to show up in a mainline direct versus here, where they tend to focus on either stuff that has been on other platforms coming to Switch or brand new stuff that hasn't been anywhere that is coming to Switch. And there's a good mix of that. I would say this one probably leans a lot more on stuff from other places that has brand recognition and you know what it is coming to Switch versus the super new stuff. But I think... for most people, and that's probably why you and I think me all like look at this and think this is one of the better ones, is because people like known quantities and they're like, oh, that famous thing is coming to Switch. We already know that is quality versus a brand new thing where no one knows if it's going to be good or not.
There was a couple of brand new ones we'll get to that I thought were like, wow, that looks really cool.
These
directs have always been strong for as well.
Totally. So let's talk through them. Do you want to go alphabetically, like chronologically, or do you want to just pick out certain announcements?
I was just going to pick out a thing.
Yes.
This was one that was new to me. I don't know if you were aware of it. New in terms of Nintendo Indie Showcase, which was Toem.
Yes, Toem I've seen tons of. Yeah, it was shown off a few times at the... E3, kind of one of the, you know, all the indie showcases there. It was shown off a couple of times through some of those ones, but also my job now requires me looking for video games on Twitter a lot, and I've seen Toem a bunch, like a few months ago.
It looks really cool. It's just kind of like this black and white hand-drawn style adventure game that kind of focuses on photography, which I just think is cool, and I don't know, it's not overly clear how all the pictures weave into like the story or what you actually have to do necessarily. Yeah. But it just has a really great vibe to it. And, you know, it's another one of those Scandinavian indies that we've talked right. about so much on the show.
That, totally. No, no, the style is great. It definitely has that black and white aesthetic going for it, but a little lighter, I would say, than stuff like The Starkness of Minute or like Downwell, which are like clear, like black and white, like very harsh.
Yes.
Whereas this is a bit more kind of lighter tone, more leaning into the white side of things. But yeah, it's very cute. You know, I've seen this and have thought like it's an adorable little idea, kind of merging Pokemon Snap with like a kind of isometric
adventure style.
Adventure.
Yeah, really, yeah, really cool. And coming Switch this fall.
Yeah, it's coming soon, which is good to see. And I don't know how that stuff plays into like, does taking photos have a relevance mechanically, like in terms of do you get scored on photos or stuff like that, or is it just like a, oh, I just want to take photos as I go through this story, as I walk through these worlds.
Right,
I'm not
right.
sure. But yeah, that one looked really cool for sure. I don't know that anything like new necessarily stood out super well to me. Obviously one that people have been waiting for a long time is Loop Hero, which came out earlier this year on PC and just absolutely destroyed. It just did incredibly well, and yeah, a few people at work talking about how that was their favorite game so far this year, and it's one that I would like to check out. It I think aesthetically it is like such a old school DOS style, like visually, so it's like hard, I think, for us, like appealing to our sensibilities, it's a little tricky. But I think mechanically it seems very rich in terms of you go around, basically the idea is you go around this loop and it's automated, right? So you, the battles are automated, all that stuff. The thing you control is you have the set of cards and you place down like buildings or mountains or stuff like that around the loop area. And so as you go around, like these things will modify it. So it will be like, okay, I'm going to increase the spawn of enemies here so I gain more experience and therefore get more loot that I bring back to my camp. And the camp is where you kind of build up stuff and all that, you know, make your residents happy and that sort of stuff. Like it's a kind of meta thing where you are similar to Rogue Legacy, I guess, where you're like going into the castle getting gold to then feed into your upgrades and everything. It's all like an upgrade loop of your getting that stuff to then feed that, and yeah, and it's a roguelike and it has those elements and it's card based, but I think the twist on it is totally different because it's not like a turn-based Slay the Spire rip-off kind of thing where it's just doing similar thing to that thing that a lot of other games have done. It is it's very much unique in its own idea, so yeah, Loop Hero is really cool and I might check it out. I'll see. Again, it takes a lot for me to get past the visual style of it, but I don't know, I, as a mechanics focused person, I do think I would quite enjoy Loop Hero. Other ones you want to pick out, Bally?
Let's just go for a big one. It's fantastic to finally get a release date for Eastward.
Yes.
I think that game is looking fantastic. We're getting it console exclusive, timed exclusive, I should say, September 16th.
Yeah.
Pre-order is available now, because why not?
Yeah, there's a 10% launch discount as well, which is the same with Axiom Verge 2, which we'll get to. But
Which is... It's that thing like, yeah, I'm going to play Axiom Verge 2, but you know, I don't really want to play it right now, but hey, I'm going to buy it right now because of that 10% discount.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of that extra little juice that pushes me over the edge where it's on my radar, but I've got to buy it this week, and it's super smart. I mean, Xbox did it as well with like Death's Door. It's just that little like launch discount is super tantalizing. I like it as a trend.
Yeah, totally. And I don't know, these bigger games, it seems like they don't necessarily need to do it. Like, did Axiom Verge need to do that to sell everybody on it day one? No. But I think it kind of pushes people a bit over the edge in a way that they might...
Just that extra bit of extra juice their sales, you know?
Totally, exactly. But talking about Eastward, that game I have been following for years, literal years. And I remember like sending you the original video I found for it on Chucklefish's YouTube channel. Must be 3 years ago at this point, and being like, this is like the best pixel art I've ever seen. And it is such a... So this is made by a Chinese studio, Chinese developer called Pixpill, and Chucklefish is publishing, obviously, but like, there, as we talk about, like, different indie publishers all have like their separate vibe, and you kind of like, you know what a Devolver game is, you know what an Annapurna game is, right? And Chucklefish very much has that like really detailed pixel art, or like very crunchy pixel art aesthetic, that you look at a game and you're like, oh, that makes sense that Chucklefish published it. But Eastward is seemingly like Earthbound meets Zelda meets Last of Us, kind of, in this weird, like, top-down adventure where it's action-based, but you're kind of exploring these spaces and going through different places. Like, RPG, action, it feels like a... I don't know how like much of a focus the narrative will be, but it does seem like there is a bunch of characters and NPCs and towns and that sort of stuff as well. Yeah, like big Earthbound vibes, and that was the kind of thing that stood out to me about it.
I do hope the mechanics and the story can match the style, because so far we've got a ton of... It's easy to get the style from the trailer, but it's really hard to understand what you're doing day to day in the game, but then also the overall narrative, because if those have a high level, like, this could be a seriously special game. So I really hope it sticks to landing on those aspects.
Yeah, I hope so. And it seems like they're pushing it pretty hard now. I heard a lot of people say they'd never heard of it before, and, you know, it hasn't been widely publicized, I don't think. It was shown in a previous Nintendo Direct, but not everyone pays attention to every single little thing. It's I'm really excited that it got like the final slot in the presentation, which I think gives it a bit more oomph, you know, like it feels like Nintendo have more weight behind it, which hopefully means they're confident in that it's a good game, right? That they're going to be putting out. So yeah, and the lot I understand throughout the Last of Us comparison there without giving any explanation, because people might be like, what, this weird top down pixel art?
Post-apocalyptic, apparently.
But it's mainly like you're this older guy with a beard and there's a younger girl, and you're both you control both characters and you switch between them. So it almost gives me vibes of the Wild at Heart that we played earlier this year, where you have two characters doing like puzzle solving on either side. I have seen gameplay of this. IGN released a bunch of gameplay a few weeks ago, and part of that was these two characters on separate paths going down this area and like helping each other to open up routes to go to the next place. So yeah, kind of similar to what the Wild at Heart was doing, although that game was much more focused on its Pikmin like mechanics. So
Any cool big picks from you, MBZ?
Obviously, Shovel Knight has a new thing that's Pocket Dungeon, which is interesting. I'm kind of more interested in Shovel Knight Dig, which is another game that they are working on in the Shovel Knight universe.
Right, I'm getting those two really confused. Right, Pocket Dungeon and Dig. Yeah.
So Pocket Dungeon is more of a match three kind of puzzle game, and I'm more open to these at this point, having played Grindstone and realizing like that game is fantastic. I would like to see how this is and maybe give it a try, but Shovel Knight Dig I think is the one that I'm more interested in, which is being made by the folks who made Bomb Chicken. Can't remember the name of that studio, but it's this very similar aesthetic they have. But yeah, it's interesting. I'm at this point, I'm just waiting for what is Yacht Club doing next, right? Like I think that's going to become the next indie, after Hollow Knight is out, it's going to be the next, like, where is Yacht Club's new game every indie direct, you know? That's going to be the thing.
Right. Are they just kind of sticking Shovel Knight in as many different genres as possible from now, you know, like what's the next step?
I mean, he is in every indie game. Look, if you go to the Wikipedia for Shovel Knight and see how many appearances he has in other video games, it's off the chain, right? They've got merchandising. He's one of the few characters who has an amiibo that's not an official Nintendo character or Smash Brothers thing, right?
Yeah.
It's a strong IP, man. I think they are just trying to make that IP grow even more and be a force that they can continue to work on.
Will he be in Yacht Club's next game, or are they going a very different direction?
I think what the reason why we're getting lots of Shovel Knight stuff is because Yacht Club are doing something else. That's my thought. It's like Yacht Club are going to make a new IP, they're going to work on something else, but they still want to keep... It's like Nintendo doing like these Zelda spin-offs every other year. It's like they want to keep it in mind for people. They don't want people to lose sight of the fact that this IP doesn't exist anymore because they're going doing something else. So by having spin-offs, by having other ways in which Shovel Knight is always in the consciousness of people, it maintains it so that when Yacht Club do want to go back and make, say, a Shovel Knight 2, like a Super Nintendo style sequel or something like that, then they can do that without having to worry about, oh, everyone's, you know, forgotten about Shovel Knight, which I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing or a good thing, because, you know, sometimes it's good for IPs to take a break and take a rest and then come back stronger in the future. But yeah, I don't know. It's and I think Yacht Club as well, they are becoming more of a publisher in their own right. Obviously they published Cyber Shadow, so yeah, it's interesting. They just feel like they want to grow their IP a bunch, and that makes sense, because Shovel Knight is very popular and he's a cool guy. I like him.
And so. Pocket Dungeon's coming this winter, apparently.
It
so
is.
We'll see if it makes it or slides, but
yes, good. I'm excited for Metal Slug Tactics, of course. Again, a weird one to show up in an indie direct because it's an IP owned by a big company, but that game, I don't think, was actually announced for Switch yet. So this is probably the first time it's been announced. No. But apparently this is more of a roguelike, more similar to Into the Breach than it is to a kind of more narrative strategy game, which is interesting. I can kind of go either way with those, honestly. Like, after Into the Breach, I was like, yeah, this works. I do like this style. So I'm definitely down to try that out. It's just, like, pixel art-wise, it's beautiful. It just looks so, so good. And I've never really played Metal Slug games. I think I played one, maybe, at a friend's house one time. But I think Contra is probably... I prefer to play Contra games over Metal Slug games generally, though, you know, I've heard Metal Slug games are very good. But they're trading on a similar sort of thing, like side-scrolling action, just shooting a bunch of enemies, that type of vibe. And so taking that IP and putting it into a tactics game, a genre which I am much more familiar with and enjoy a lot more, speaks to me quite a bit. So I'm interested to see how this does, how this reviews, because I potentially will pick this up when it comes out. I think it seems pretty, pretty cool. So that's a pretty good highlight for me. And then, yeah, we had loads of other games that were talked about throughout this thing. You got stuff like Boyfriend Dungeon, which is also coming out day one. It was already out on Game Pass, right? Yeah, they're bringing a version of Necrobarista, which is a game that did quite well a few years ago on PC.
There's a bunch of ports, actually.
That's what I'm saying, is like a game like Islanders, which I'd never heard of before, but has killed it on Steam. There's also Slime Rancher, which is also another one that's really popular, and Astroneer, which we tried to play co-op and just didn't work when we're trying to do cross-play with Xbox and PC. And I would like to go back and try and play some Astroneer with you, because I think that would be a really fun time. But yeah, that's a great one to get on there. It's one of those which I think is, I'm more skeptical about how well it runs, because, you know, big open kind of spaces and stuff like that, 3D. It's
stuff like Tetris Effect, which I thought was quite graphically demanding, but I could be wrong, you know.
And I think a lot of the joy of Tetris Effect is like how nice it looks, and so playing it on Switch, I don't know, obviously, like, portably it's great to just play Tetris, but there's a lot of way to play Tetris on Switch. I think I'm pretty sure there's a bunch of Tetris games on the eShop, but also there's Tetris 99 that's already there.
Puyo Tetris.
That's exactly, yeah, they've got loads. So and stuff like Gang Beasts, which hasn't been on Switch. And that, again, that version looked kind of rough.
A long time now, yeah.
It's been out for ages. So yeah, it's still, we're still getting classic popular indies coming to the system, even this far into its life cycle, right? We're going to get Spelunky 1 and 2 coming out at the end of August, you know? Like, it's, there are games that still will come out on Switch that have been out for years and years on other platforms. And it's smart because they already have recognition and a name, and they'll do pretty well, I'm sure, on the system as a result. One that I was curious about that I didn't know a lot about, I'd heard of Far Lone Sails before, but I didn't really know much about it. But the sequel to that, Far Changing Tides, is coming to Switch. I don't know what you thought about this one, Bally, but it seemed like a interesting, like, seafaring adventure. Spiritfarer is similar in some ways, I guess, but this seemed more focused on the actual kind of exploration aspect, whereas that was maybe a bit more simmy.
Yeah, it looked kind of... I like the style of it a lot. I'd just be really interested in, like, what is the game loop of that game, you know, how it works. Like,
exactly.
It looks really cool.
It does. It looks really cool.
Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, a new one.
Yes, so that was the one that opened the presentation. Right. I believe I've seen that one again before, just because I just see every game these days. But it is... How much you know about Jet Set Radio and that kind of group
not
of games?
Not much. But yeah, it looks kind of like that third-person action open-worldy kind of thing, which is never the best genre for the Switch, but it does look cool.
It does, yeah, and it is 100%, like, it is aping the Jet Set Radio style so heavily, just, like, the vibes of it, the aesthetic, and that was a game that was kind of about, like, sliding around, skateboarding almost, but doing it on rails and grinding places and that type of thing, so almost like this Tony Hawk thing, but also with, like, spray paint, and you would, like, tag walls and that sort of thing, so I think this is, it's basically being like, well, people love this franchise and no one's making it anymore, let's do an indie one of those, as happens with literally everything these days. It's like, Nintendo won't make old Paper Marios, well, here's Bug Fables, and it's like, Nintendo won't make Advance Wars, here's Wargroove, right? It's just constant you know, push from those smaller developers who grew up with those games to be like, let's make one because no one else is making one. It looks really cool. It looks pretty neat. I haven't played the Jet Set games, but I'm interested to see how that does and how good that is. So yeah, a few other shadow drops as well, like Garden Story came out and dropped. But I guess we could segue, unless you have any other things to mention. I don't think there was much else.
I think we've covered everything.
I think we covered everything.
Apart from one big one.
One big one. It was, they had a bit of a kind of few games that were shadow dropping, like coming out today. And the last one they announced was Axiom Verge 2, the sequel to 2015, I believe. 2015's 2015? Axiom Verge. It's been 6 years. It's been a long time. Because it came out, I think, same year as Ori. Hell of a year, 2015. So, this is a follow-up and quite different in quite a few ways. Obviously, the aesthetic and the tone and all that stuff seems a little bit removed from what Axiom Verge was, like color palette-wise.
It's a bit more colorful, doesn't it? Like,
I don't know. I think I wouldn't say necessarily more colorful, but just like different in a way, because Axiom Verge is like very red aesthetically, whereas this is very kind of blue and gray. And so, yeah, I downloaded it and I have started playing. I'm not very far in, maybe in 40 minutes or so, just been running around the opening area and kind of figuring stuff out. And yeah, so this is still made by Tom Happ, the one man developer who, you know, has basically done everything, I believe. I think the music might be him as well. I'm not certain on that, but I think he pretty much did most stuff in terms of making this game. And I liked Axiom Verge quite a bit. I thought, you know, it was one of the earlier kind of entries in these indie Metroidvanias, and I think it's a game that is mostly comparable to Super Metroid out of all the games that have been made by smaller studios, and this one seems to be departing from that in a few different ways. So I think the first thing is that you don't have a gun out of the bat. You have a pickaxe, which is a melee weapon, and I think I'm getting a little tough, like getting used to it at the beginning of the game, because I am so used to this style having you know, the enemies and the stuff that you come up against feel like they are built for you to fight with a gun in Axiom Verge. There's especially there's this one enemy that keeps killing me over and over again. It's really annoying me. That's a flying
even
enemy
in the first 40 minutes
in the first, yeah, and it's just this flying enemy that shoots a bunch of lasers at you, and I just like, you can't get close enough to hit it. You do get a second weapon, which is a boomerang, and I'm sure there's a bunch of other weapons you get, but the boomerang is less powerful, doesn't do as much damage, has like certain ranges that you can only do it left, right, or like diagonally, and so it is, it feels like I have less options out the bat, even though I kind of have the same. It's just like turning on its head a little bit, and so it feels quite challenging out of the bat, which is interesting because I've read some reviews, and reviews seem to think like it's easier, or at least a bit more easier. And one of the ways in which it does that is it supposedly like lets you skip boss fights, so you don't have to fight bosses. You can just like run past them essentially, and it makes sense from an accessibility standpoint of like, some people, the bosses in Axiom Verge 1 were really hard.
First game,
I remember fighting
tough,
some tough ones there, so it makes sense from that perspective of like, they took feedback of people really got stuck on these things and wanted to see through the rest of the story in the world and exploration, like the other elements of the Metroidvania style, but didn't want to fight the bosses, which is an interesting approach to it. And I think more games should add accessibility stuff like that. And speaking of that, you can adjust like how much damage enemies do to you and how much damage you do to enemies in the menu. There is accessibility options there. So, you know, if you are having a tough time with it, then that's available for you and you can kind of tweak those. But yeah, I'm a little unsure about it at the moment. I'm enjoying the base kind of movement and the look. The music is really great. The music has this kind of definitely different vibe to it. The main character is called Indra, and she, I think, is like Indian or like Asian of some descent, and that's interesting because the music kind of matches that. It feels Eastern in a different way. Like, it has the kind of synthetic vibe to it, but it also kind of mixes in those elements, which is really curious. You know, exploring the spaces and knowing where to go is very much what Axiom Verge is about. It feels like this one is a lot more open from the beginning, and you can kind of go in all these different directions and find, you know, different upgrades, and then eventually you'll be able to conquer the whole map. But from what I've heard, yeah, it's a lot more kind of exploration focused than combat. And so maybe I shouldn't be like, I think this big enemy at the start is being put there to be like, look, you can't beat this thing easily, just run away from it, right? So I think that's kind of what I have to do for the moment before I, you know, get my upgrades and get my health better and my attacks better and all that stuff.
Apparently it's a prequel. Not that I could say much about the story of the first game, but
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. I think the first game did have a a story to speak of. I don't remember any of it, and I don't really care because that's not what I'm there for. But yeah, it's curious, and it seems, I don't know if she has amnesia or anything, but like, you read some documents, maybe she just isn't mentioning this stuff, but suppose there's a lot of early on, there's a lot of like anti-corporation and anti-capitalist kind of not critique necessarily, but I guess there's ways in which it's obvious that that's being a little bit lambasted by some of the notes you pick up. And supposedly this main character is the CEO of like a $1 trillion business, which is weird. I'm not sure what that will wind up doing with the story, or if it will have anything to say about that necessarily. But yeah, that was a curious thing. One of the first upgrades I got was the grip, which is similar to Metroid Fusion, I noted, of like, you get the... you get the grip in Zero Mission. You have the grip out the bat in Fusion, so you can hang off ledges. But in Zero Mission, you get the grip as an upgrade early on, where you're like, oh, right, now you can hang off ledges as an ability. And yeah, so that is like being used in the way of, you have this pickaxe, and so sometimes you'll kind of climb up the side of mountains or like hills or whatever by notching the pickaxe into the side of it, essentially. So yeah, so far it's okay. I don't know, I'll see how it goes. It probably it'll take a bit of time for me to get used to it and understand the systems a bit more.
You've got a lot on your plate right now.
I'm playing a lot of video games, man. I'm playing a lot of stuff, including the game we're going to talk about today, which I always love at Bally, when there's a game that comes out, know nothing about it, it's just there, and we play it, and we're like, well, that was a delightful surprise of this year.
Yeah,
And I think Dodgeball Academia, which is the game that we are going to talk about, is exactly that. So, Bally, you've been playing this. I just finished it yesterday.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I'm in chapter 7 now, so I've got
nice, close to the chapters. End. Yeah, you're close to the end. The way I would pitch this to people is... a sports, like a Mario sports RPG meets Pokemon meets an anime like My Hero Academia, in terms of, it's really kind of like Mario Tennis but with dodgeball instead of the tennis matches, like the Game Boy Mario Tennis and GBA ones, where you have this narrative and you upgrading and stuff like that. They're so, like, musically, and also like some of the things, like you run past people and they spot you like Pokemon, so much Pokemon influence,
and like
even
the
though
Pokemon Center, the sound Pokemon when you Center, go into a battle, the sound when you heal, the
when you finish a chapter, it sounds like beating a gym, you know, like that. It's so, it's like not the same, but the way in which the music is done,
yeah it's very cleverly done.
It's
very
so clever, it sounds very so well good done. And I love it, like there is this kind of shot of nostalgia with it, with that, even though it's not the same, but it's like this almost alternate universe version of the music, and I think it is so good. So like, I think a lot of the trappings around it have that Pokemon aesthetic, and then it's all based in a school, so it, and you have these weird wonderful characters who are all like, sometimes they're a cat, sometimes one of the characters just,
sometimes they're human, but sometimes they're just a cat, sometimes they're a balloon that fills up and explodes,
just have a balloon for a head called Balloony,
and then one of the teachers is like a giant baboon, you know,
right,
like, why not?
Yeah, which is exactly like what an anime like My Hero Academia does, and they just don't explain it. They're just like, yeah, there's a dog as the principal in this world. Just roll with it, man. That's kind of just what these this stuff is doing, and that game is leaning on it. So that pastiche of influences sounds good, but I think they really bring it together with this game. I don't know about it. How have you felt about Dodgeball Academia overall?
I absolutely love it. I think two things it kind of crutches on is a negative term, I don't mean crutches, but two things that it does so well that I think it excels at are, first of all, the actual dodgeball matches feel really good. If they didn't feel good, the whole game would fall completely flat.
Like, totally,
I think the fact that it feels good, it's like this nice learning curve that does feel a lot like, I don't know, like a like Mario Tennis on Game Boy Color or something. It's like that, it's easy to learn, fairly difficult to master, maybe,
yeah,
but like,
I
you still
so
get better at it. And those matches are very short and sharp, but fun. And then, as you say, I think the other thing that this game stands up on is characters and just the writing. And it is enjoyable just exploring the world and interacting with characters. And constantly, because the whole game is basically character interaction match. And it rarely goes off that.
There's a bit of exploring, obviously. Like, the school is a... The school is like a nice size, right? Like it has these different areas and you have the kind of the central area, but it's never overwhelming.
No, and it's super quick to get from A to B all the time. Yes. It's nice. You never feel like you're backtracking too far to the healing.
As well, I also love the idea of, they never explain this either, but your main character, if you want to run, he just rolls up into a ball and starts rolling around the place like he's a morph ball from Metroid. Yeah. And I'm like, that never gets explained, but whatever. It's a it's like a fast way of moving in a game, and you always know that's one of my things of like, I don't want to just be walking places. I got to roll places, right? That's what you're doing. Yeah. You know, so all those Zelda speedrunners have got to roll, got to get there faster. So that's kind of what he does. And
it's just like a really nice soundtrack, but I think the anime style works so well because the characters themselves are two-dimensional, but the world is like 3D polygonal. And it's like quite a base level of 3D polygonal, but it actually works really nicely. And the few areas you go to where the camera will like pan out a bit, it just really, you kind of stop and think, wow, that world is so intricate and gorgeous. Like it's all put together so nicely. And it runs really well. Like I'm obviously playing on Series X, but it's running and it's had a boost, I believe, but it just runs and looks fantastic.
Yeah, totally. And I think coming back to the dodgeball mechanics, that is definitely a core part of the game. And so if it wasn't as good as it is or as satisfying as it is, I do think that, you know, it still would be fun to run around and see those character interactions, stuff like that. But I think with that being the meat of the game, it has to succeed on that, and it really, really does. Like the other thing that's nice about it is that they always switch things up. There's a good amount of variety either in the way that the court is assembled, or the way in which the different balls you have different elements to them.
Some of them are just a pain in the ass, but
totally. Like the poison one where you pick it up and just starts poisoning you that time, and you're like, I've got to get rid of this. But then also, all the different characters have different ways in which they throw the ball at you, and so it's learning the different timings of all of these. And so if you have a team of like five people, by the end of the game it's like facing five people, there's like an electric ball, a fireball, a poison ball, an ice ball on the field, and they're all being thrown at you from different directions. You're trying to catch them, you're trying to not be hit too much, dodging out the way. And then your characters have different abilities as well. So you have Balloony, who can heal people with his ultimate move, ultimate move. Everything has a ball pun in this game. They really go in on the puns when it comes to that stuff. There's a character called Tsuneko who has a baseball bat, and instead of catching, she charges her baseball bat and knocks them back. A couple of characters have that where they kind of counter it instead of catching the ball. There are different kind of ways in which you can use those characters. For the most part, I tended to use Otto, who's the main character, for most stuff. Yeah. But by the end of the game, especially, I did the last boss fight yesterday, and it was really intense because I was like switching between people, went to Balloony to heal every now and again, then had to switch back to another character who I'd put a massive defense boost on, and then his special attack was different, so I could do a bunch of damage with that. And then there was also a moment where two of my characters who you start the game with like get taken away from you for a while, so you're kind of forced to use other characters.
Yeah, there's some chapters that are good for that where they force you to just kind of mix it up.
Yeah, totally. And so I was using the cat character whose special was a tornado, and so I had an item equipped to him that automatically filled up his meter by 80% at the start of the fight. So what I would do is at the start of the fight, I would catch all the balls. By the time I caught them all, his ultimate would be charged. Switch over to him. He chucks out these two massive tornadoes. Switch back to Otto, and they're all just in tornadoes, and I'm just like chuck, 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 because the balls come back to me automatically after the tornado. And it was like this, it felt like finding this really cool combo by experimentation, and by the game also making me use these different characters I hadn't before. And I was like, oh, that's great. I'm destroying here because I found this kind of set of moves that works together that has created something that isn't just, okay, dodging, catching, throwing, you know, which is great.
I think the game is also like, I like how it forces you to actually get good on defense. So whether you're dodging the balls or catching the balls, there are most of the more difficult bosses, enemies, if you mess up, like, kind of, like, the mistakes compound very quickly. Like, when you take 20 damage, you might take another 30, and then another 30 very suddenly. So, like, you really do have to know what you're doing in terms of catching or dodging and making a conscious decision. Right, I can't just go in playing my own style every time. I have to adapt to what they're doing. Because, like you say, every enemy has, like, their own style of throwing the ball that you have to learn, and you get completely punished if you don't learn that.
It can feel unfair at points. There's a special that one of the characters does where it like does ball, he throws a bunch of balls and they all circle in like a spinning motion, and if you get caught by one of them, good luck, you're fucked, because they'll just keep coming, they'll keep knocking you about, so that could be really dangerous.
And as much as I love the 2D on a 3D setting, I do think mechanically sometimes in dodgeball fights it can be sometimes difficult to work out when I'll like try and jump over a ball and then I'll still get hit by it, and I'll think, oh, if this was just a little more precise about like being clear about where the hitbox is, I would have been able to avoid that damage, and then that damage lost me the match or something. They're like, it can sometimes feel a little bit annoying in that sense, but at the same time there's times where you're throwing the ball, you do 20 damage, that you knock them down, and then just as they get up again you throw another ball and you're doing more damage. Like it goes both ways, but it's not, it's just a little bit frustrating and not overly clean at times on that, on the action aspects.
Yeah, for sure. And I think like some of it can be, if a ball gets thrown at you, you move out of the way, but your friend is behind you, your teammate, and your teammate gets hit by it.
Yeah, that feels really annoying,
Which, actually, you can... So if you are like holding the button, like if you charge like Tsuneko's baseball bat and you hit it, even though she's not your main player, if the timing is correct, that will be countered back. Yeah, I had that happen a few times where that is possible. It's just trickier because of the way that it focuses on your main character, and your other two characters are a bit harder to see, they're behind you and that sort of thing. But
if you're charging with Tsuneko to baseball bat back, you can't also catch with Otto at the same time because it's a different input.
Right, you know, so it's like it depends on where the ball is going, and you have to kind of see what's happening there. But yeah, when it comes to like changing up the battlefield, there are matches where you're out in the parking lot and cars will just be going back and forth on the field. And so you're dodging out the way of the cars as well as trying to catch balls. There's an ice area later in the game where you're sliding on the ice as you're doing fights.
Not looking forward to that.
Which doesn't... It didn't really make too much of a difference, to be honest with you. I don't think it's like end of the world situation. But yeah, they vary things in a really cool way. And even sometimes in the type of dodgeball match that you will do, sometimes you can knock people out and the match will keep going. Sometimes if you knock someone out, it'll be like, oh, stop it, they're out, now we're going to reset, basically. And it will be their turn to start off again. So like if one of your characters goes down, it will stop and it'll be like, okay, they're out, they're going to go behind you. And that actually has helped in a couple of the tougher matches where like I've lost a couple of people, but they're behind where the enemy team is, and I only have one person on the map, and then you can like throw your ball back to behind you, and your teammates will help you from behind by throwing it from the sidelines. And that also happens with people you face, where if you miss the ball, it goes behind you, their teammates will pick it up and throw from behind at you, and then you can be in a really awkward pincer situation where you're getting thrown from the front, from the back, cars are going past. Like it can get hectic pretty quickly. But what I will say is I think that the mechanics are solid enough and work pretty much most of the time, aside from the issues that you've had with certain things, that it always feels like it's your fault if you've messed up, for the most part, I find. And that's good. That's kind of what you want with a game like this. Because
I should also say, at university, Caroline actually played dodgeball.
At
university. So I was asking her about some of the rules, and she says that whole thing where you get knocked out and you stand behind and then throw balls back in, that's totally made up for this game.
Or must be.
Japanese or American variation.
I think it's just like a game mechanic thing they probably threw in there to make it like a... It's almost like a comeback mechanic.
It's like an equalizer almost.
Right, yeah, totally, yeah. Because there are some tough matches. I tried to do most of the side quests, actually. I didn't finish all of them. There is a... there's this one guy that you have to fight every day, and the last day he was just too powerful for me, and I was like, well, I'd have to kind of grind probably to get good enough to fight him. So didn't finish that one. And there's also like an underground fighting arena that you can go to.
Yeah, I tried that once, and I'm just like,
yeah, they kind of give it to you a bit early when you're not high enough level to do it, really. So you kind of have to wait on that one. But every other side quest I did, and they're all like fun little things. Another thing I really like about the overworld is that there are random dodgeballs scattered around, and you can just pick them up and hold them and take them with you. And there are chests in the world that can only be opened by throwing dodgeballs at those chests to open them.
Did you get any of the keys for the chests?
I didn't, and I have no idea how you get any of those chests that are locked up.
Weird. I've not got any yet. I was wondering, now that you've been it, did it take like 10, 11 hours to beat?
It took me about 9.5, I think, going by the in
I think I'm on about 8 hours at the moment, so.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, like the open kind of space that you run around, the school and the forest, and there are some other places. I would say probably my weakest element of the game is kind of the middle half of it, where you're not going anywhere new. You're kind of just running back and forth to, like, you know, find somebody or do something, or it's not showing you new places, and you're kind of just doing battles in between.
Everything goes back to the forest for like three, four chapters in a row for some reason. Yeah. It's just like, come on, let's go somewhere else.
And it was great when they first opened the forest, because like, oh, it's a new area to explore and I can go and find stuff. But then they don't have enough of those as you go through. And to be honest with you, I think that may have bloated the game a little, because I think it's really tight and nice at like 10 hours or so. But it would have been good if they had, you know, a bit more variety in terms of the places you go, because it's like, I think chapter 3 is where the forest opens, and then chapter 7 is where you open the other, like, icy area. And those are the two, I guess the parking lot comes somewhere in the between, but that's, like, not as interesting and a bit smaller and that type of thing. So yeah, you have, like, some locations you go to. I wish there was a bit more variety in terms of that stuff in the middle of the game. But
like, Golf Story is considerably longer than this game, but that game is relentless in the way that you are constantly moving on to like new courses and new areas that mix up the mechanics quite nicely. So this is a much shorter game.
I think I like this more than Golf Story. I'm going to say it.
See,
I
just fundamentally enjoy golf more than dodgeball.
I get that, but
I will say the writing is very good in both games. I'm just a golf person, but I might prefer this aesthetic perhaps, though.
I think
it's really just popping, like it looks so great. But Golf Story is going to take a lot of beating in my mind. Maybe Sports Story can beat it. I don't know, which is the game we didn't get any details on in the indie showcase. But
I think that got delayed a little bit, but that's fine. I'm sure that will be great when it comes out. But this game is incredibly charming, and I don't think the story, quote-unquote, isn't, like, super interesting. It's like, you know, you're going to go through tournaments and fight people, and by the end you'll learn things along the way, and it was all about the power of friendship, just like an anime, right? Like, that's kind of what it comes down to. But, like, I think the writing is very... One thing that is, like, a very, like, tiny thing that people don't talk about that I like quite a bit is the speed at which text plays through the text boxes. And it's just something for me is, like, I hate it when I have to wait for text to populate, because I read quite quickly. And so the fact that these text boxes are like, brr, brr, there's the dialogue, and you click through. Like, it just feels good to button through the dialogue in a weird way that I appreciated. And the writing is just, like, very colloquial, sharp, funny. You know, you got, like, loads of... One of my favorite jokes is the chapter where I actually do like this narratively is, like, the class gets told that they have to look after these quote-unquote baby balls. Yeah. And so you get matched up with your rival who you hate, and you have to be parents to this ball. And every time Otto like talks about the ball's name, he changes the name of the ball. And it was just, I found it so funny every time he did that. I was like, wow, this is great. It's just, it really nails the tone, and it was a joy. I really had a great time playing it. And I recommend people check it out. It's on Switch. It's also on Game Pass. So if you have that, you can check it out there. But this would be a pretty good handheld game, I think. You know,
I hope it runs well on Switch.
It doesn't seem like it would. I watched the Nintendo World Report's review, and Neil over there gave it a 9. Thought it was very, very good. So I'm sure that is an excellent version. Yeah, no, he loves the thing. Yeah, Neil from NWR, he's great. He's very good on. They've relaunched the Connectivity podcast, which is from years ago. Him and John Redden are doing that, and I've been enjoying that. But yeah, he does like to give lots of nines and tens to games, which is great. It's his passion. But I really love this game. I think it definitely deserves a lot more love. So please do check it out
if you like Golf Story or Pokemon or any other sports RPG. Like, this is so in there. Like, it's doing all those things so well. Like, would highly recommend.
Really great. And a team from Brazil, I believe.
Cool. Not enough people are talking about this game, so no. Spread the word.
Yes, great do game. That great. Well, that I believe is going to close us for the first part of the show, but do not worry, we'll be back after the break talking about some of your emails. Don't go anywhere, we will be right back.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to the second segment of today's show. It is time for your emails. We put out the call, we put it far and wide, and some people got back to us, which was really, really heartening. So huge thanks to everyone who wrote in, but we're still putting out that call. You know,
it's not over, man. We've got don't end it now. Keep sending those emails. We need them.
We need them. So please email thisnintendolife@gmail.com. That is thisnintendolife@gmail.com. Or leave a comment, a thought in our Discord server. Link to that in the description. It's a great community we've got over there on Discord. So jump in. Join the fun. Our first email is actually from Discord. And it's from Renee, who says, "Hey guys, I recently finished Omno and absolutely loved it. It's amazing to see what a solo developer passion project can do nowadays. The Falconeer and Yono, the Celestial Elephants, are two other examples of solo dev games that are, in my opinion, really good because of those I started looking more into this scene. It seems that with the development of new tools that the overall progression of technology is becoming easier for small teams to create high quality games, which I really appreciate. Do you think solo and small team projects, like 3 to 5 people maximum, will become more prominent in the future, or do you think it will stay the niche that it is right now? Also, if you had to choose to only play one kind, a few big AAA games or selection of those small games, which one would you choose and why? Keep up the good work, and greetings from Germany, Renee."
Fantastic. Thanks, Renee, for your email. Yeah, I mean,
what makes a successful indie game, MBZ? Isn't this overlapping with...
Don't try and interview me about my literal job, Ali. No, it's interesting actually, because I at the moment I'm doing a lot of talking with different developers, and Renee says like, "Oh, it seems like this very niche thing." What I'll tell you is that, having done a ton of meetings with a ton of different developers, you'll be surprised at how many indie developers are teams of like 2 to 5 people. That is most of the people I've talked to when it comes to that stuff. And I think that generally happens because someone wants to make a game, they want to do it on a budget that is not overwhelming, right? A lot of people have to self-fund themselves, or they have to like find a way of making this in some way that is either in their spare time because they got a job, or like some way of making it work by finding a publisher and stuff like that. And as a result, like, the team sizes can be quite small, and if you're doing something on your own, obviously it's different as well, and it's just like a solo project. But the thing is, right, is that stuff that is successful isn't necessarily always those things, because majority of the games that are being made you will never hear about, right? Like, There are thousands and thousands and thousands of games put on Steam every year. There are hundreds and hundreds of games put on the eShop every month, right? And so it is this constant struggle for anyone to get their game seen or understood or anything like that. And so when something does break through, there's a chance it will be one of those that is made by a really small team, but there's equally a chance that it's made by a slightly larger team, or they have more of a budget because they went with a publisher, or all these different things. So yeah, it depends. It is an interesting kind of thing, because I think with a solo developed game, there is, we always talk about authorship in video games, right? And how, like, oh, Hideo Kojima, or like Klipczynski, or like these names, Miyamoto, right? It's like, ah, oh, Miyamoto created all of Mario from his blood, sweat, and tears. And sure, like, I think like the first Super Mario Brothers probably had a very small team.
We treat them a bit too much like Walt Disney, you know, when there's so many people behind all those ideas.
And fairly probably shouldn't treat Walt Disney like Walt Disney either, right?
Totally, yeah.
Because that's just not kind of how things work. But I get it a bit more when it is like Eric Baroni, who made Stardew Valley on his own, right? Because no one else helped him. He did it all, and that was him. He made that one game. That's his entire vision. So, like, as an...
Including music, which is often...
Yeah, totally.
Often you have, like, a separate composer or someone, but for him to do it all is, yeah.
Same with Toby Fox and Undertale, right? Like, all that music is hit, and it's like some of the most classically revered video game music of all time now, and he did it all himself alongside making the whole game. And so there is... Undertale's a good example as well, because it really has that feel of something that it has absolute, like, clarity in its direction and its message and everything it's trying to say. And Stardew Valley is kind of a different game in that sense, but those two games, both made by one person, Axiom Verge, another good example, Tom Hatt making Axiom Verge.
I was going to say, for my reference of, say, our top 50 games from episode 200, how many, which of those games, to your knowledge, are under five people, shall we say?
I don't know. I'd have to look at the list and go through.
I'd throw in there, like, Hollow Knight.
Obviously, yeah, Hollow Knight is a couple of people. Stardew Valley, I mean...
Night in the Woods?
Night in the Woods, I think, probably quite a small team as well, you know? Most of these studios are quite small. And if they aren't, it's like a team that starts small that grows. Like, Moon Studios is a good example of a team that was relatively small, and then Microsoft funded them, and then their first game was a success. And I only realized this the other day. I was watching a video on it. Moon Studios now employs 80 people worldwide.
Wow.
So they're not a small indie really anymore, right? And like, when you get to those numbers, it starts, I feel like the line starts to blur between like, is indie, right? The fact that Metal Slug Tactics was featured in the Indie World Showcase is like, well, I mean, this is an IP owned by a big company, right? But it's being treated as quote-unquote an indie. And so it's weird in that sense. Same with, like, Zelda, the Cadence of Hyrule, which is like, well, it's using Nintendo's IP, but it's being made by independent developers that make it an indie. Like, is Cuphead counted as an indie at this point? Who knows? Like, it's... Everything just shifts around, you know? And even with Minecraft, right? Like, that was a game that was made by a very small group at the beginning, and now it is a juggernaut that is one of the best-selling, if not the best-selling video game of all time. I think the sentiment of this email is like, look, these are the types of games where we get a lot more interesting ideas from, where the space has time to breathe and developers can kind of do what they want, right? As we mentioned in that episode, Night in the Woods would never be made by a AAA publisher because it actually has a fucking stance on issues, right? Like, as opposed to Ubisoft, who just fucking, like, we don't do politics, we don't know what any of this means, la-di-da-di-da. From that perspective, they are allowed to actually have leeway to say something meaningful as opposed to phoning things in, like a lot of
people. I mean, I think a lot of AAA games often say something meaningful while at the same time completely avoiding actual political realities of situations, like all the story-driven stuff. Like, there are interesting discussions and things happening in those games, but they're so far away from the reality of what the topics are Night in the Woods is talking about that on that kind of more political level, they are incredibly flat, even if they are emotionally much more resonant, perhaps.
Right. Yeah, totally. So, it's interesting, right? Because then you do have a game like Omno, which I didn't realize, yeah, was made by one person. We talked about that on our Patreon episode. Plug, mm-hmm. if you want to go listen to that. It's a cool little game. I would say that, for me, that is much more of a kind of like pastiche of ideas as opposed to its own unique thing. Like, it feels like, oh, let's do take a bit of Journey here, let's take a bit of Abzu here, let's you know, just take some of these ideas and put them together into this thing, which is like widely recognized as like good in quality, but isn't necessarily doing anything particularly new or innovative or different. And I would say that for the most part, the indie space is probably closer to what Omno is if we're looking at it like in totality. And so there is, as much as we like to say, oh, that's where all the innovation is, a lot of indie games that are made that no one ever hears about or just don't go anywhere are really just kind of takes on an idea that has been done plenty of times before. And it's just like, it's another Metroidvania, it's another puzzle platformer with not super interesting level design or whatever. But again, you don't hear about those games for the most part because they aren't interesting enough to break through the noise and therefore are not successful.
And how many, you know, what about indie games, very small indie games, should emphasize that maybe do have incredibly innovative ideas, but maybe there are aspects of the game that are lacking in other ways. And then as a result, those aspects might turn off publishers and they still fall through the gaps, even though they have some like really innovative stuff in there, you know, like I think, like there's a multitude of different things that can happen. And like for something to break through, it does need the publisher. It does need the limelight, especially if you're like coming onto the Switch eShop or, you know, onto Game Pass. Like there's games coming onto Game Pass that barely make any waves, a bit like Omno. Like it's doing fine, it's doing pretty well, but it's not like,
it's doing a lot better than it would have done had it not been on Game
Pass.
Right? So it is giving it some, it's giving it a bit more curation and visibility than ordinarily a game like that would get, which I think is good. But again, it's just, we live in a world where there are too many fucking video games. And I tweeted about it the other day and got a bunch of likes, which I think means it resonates with people of like, no longer are we kids who can only get one game a year and have to have that one game, and it's the only thing we play, and we don't have enough money for it, and there aren't actually a huge number of games to choose from anyway.
Can you imagine growing up and I'd have to tell my mom like, oh, I'd love to play this game, and she's like, all right, great, how much is it? And I'm like, it's £12. She'd be like, sure.
You know, yeah, like,
not
exactly.
£40 a pop, you know, like which it became for a while.
It's just like the pricing and the business models of so many games, right? I've been playing a ton of Splitgate. It's a game that's 100% free on all platforms right now, crossplay, all that stuff. And so if you're a kid and you're like, well, I've got so many options now, right? Like even Minecraft as a barrier to entry is like what, 15-20 quid? It's not massive compared to a Call of Duty or like a big budget game that the regular AAA industry is built around. And you know, like that's the thing, most kids are playing free stuff, right? They're playing Fortnite, they're playing all these things, Roblox, for God's sake. There's an abundance of stuff you don't actually have to pay for, which I think is shaping a lot of our younger generation's taste right now, because not only are they in that situation that we were in where they don't have money and their parents don't want to buy all them that stuff, they have so many more options with that situation being the case. For us, it was like, oh, well, I have to own a piece of hardware, and it's not like an iPad or whatever, which is just in the house for so many people. Like games were very much situated in their one specific place, which was a console or a computer or whatever that could run them. And now games are just like, you can stream them and you can do all these different things. And there's so many ways in which people can access those experiences that, I don't know. It's totally different. And then speaking for us nowadays, it's just like, well, I own like infinite video games. I will never complete every game I own. It's just a fact. Like it's not going to happen. And with Game Pass and free stuff, it's endless. And then the Switch indie thing comes out and I'm like, Axiom Verge 2 is available today. I'm like, well, fucking buying that, aren't I? It's just like, it just doesn't stop.
So this marketplace, while it helps, you know, small 3 to 5 people projects, also makes it just so much harder because it is just so competitive. And as the industry is just growing and booming, Will 3 to 5 people indies become more prominent? It's like, yes, they will, I think, but that's not to say that 99% of them will also just flounder and fade away and never be reach the light of day, you know? Like it's,
yeah.
So yeah, I think it's a bit like becoming a YouTuber in 2009. Like it's booming, right. It's getting bigger, but it Are there now more successful small YouTubers than there were before? Definitely, but it's also 10 times harder to break through. I think indies are maybe in a similar position.
It's like 100 times harder, man. It's just like keeps getting wider and wider, and that is the issue, right? Like, of course, we talked about Dodgeball Academy in the first segment, and that is a fantastic game. We both love it. It's like probably in my Game of the Year list somewhere. And is that game going to break through and like do super well in the same way that like Celeste or Hollow Knight did? No, of course not. Does it deserve to? Probably not. But I mean, the game is excellent. Like, it's super well made, really polished, like so much fun, interesting new idea. And I just don't think it's going to do that well, which is sad and it sucks. And that happens to so many video games these days. And so it's like, I guess it's up to people like us to be like, hey, pay attention to this. We like this. You should check it out.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, obviously we have a very small imprint or dent on what people think about games, or even like if people pick up games as a result of us talking about them, which I'm sure has happened in the past and stuff like that. But, you know, we can't change the world when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah.
And nor should we be able to, really, because there's just too much. There's too much.
And there's so much luck in this whole discussion, because you can have all the support of like a huge platform like Nintendo being like, yeah, we're going to promote it on this Indie Direct, and it's going to have all this promotion, and then your game might still come out on the same day as, I don't know, Last of Us, Breath of the Wild 2, like some crazy big AAA game that's been delayed and is arriving at a time that no one really expected, but completely flattens your smaller game. You know, like, you can just have bad luck at the last step.
Right. Like, look at Spelunky 2 last year with Hades, right? Like, Spelunky 2 this year, this game has been in development for years and years, like, anticipated. It comes out the same time as this other game that is in the same genre that people are much more into.
Actually got flattened by another indie.
It's wild, right? Like, Hades just completely ate its lunch. And that's crazy, because like that's a sequel to like a beloved huge game, and I'm sure Spelunky 2 has done fine. I'm sure it's sold absolutely fantastic, but yeah, it is. Even in those situations, it's just like, holy shit, dude. There's a real kind of issue when it comes to that stuff, and in many ways, it's fantastic. There are more games than ever, and there are more games for everybody and for different people than ever. Right, Boyfriend Dungeon came out. I'm like, that's an interesting concept. I might check it out on Game Pass because it's free, but like, is that a game for me? Not necessarily. It's like, but there is a big audience for it, and I'm glad that people are getting catered to.
I'll just get around to it once I've beaten these other six games I've got on my playlist.
I know. I think in some senses, but I think we are a unique case in that we like to play as much as possible and have a wide taste and play loads of things.
Yeah, we're very much in the like, want to formulate a great top 10 list, got to play games that come out this year, want to stay on board with like what's hype right now. We put together this podcast, put together a Nintendo podcast, you know, like, we are definitely on top of a lot of spinning a lot of plates at the same time. And you're right, there's a lot of people who are still very into video games that aren't, you know, playing that crazy number of games that we're playing. So and that number for me personally has just gotten higher and higher every year. So
that's the thing. Yeah. More good video games are coming out every year.
Yeah.
And it's so much harder to keep up with everything. So, but it's good. It's great.
If you had to pick between, this is the second part of the question. If you had to pick between the small 3 to 5 maximum people indie games or AAA games, and you had to pick one over the other, which would you pick?
Do Nintendo games count as AAA games?
I think they do. You know?
I guess so. I mean, like, the thing is, WarioWare that's coming out in September, that's not a AAA game, right? Like, it's WarioWare, right?
Yeah,
like,
that doesn't
count as a AAA game. I think if we...
In a world where these lines are very merged, I agree, but blurred, I should say, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. And you know, to be frank with you, like, I'm going to choose indie every time. Like, it's just...
I thought you might.
A much more interesting space
for me.
It's
Breath of the Wild, your favorite game of all time.
Yeah,
no problem.
The thing is,
at all.
There are phenomenal AAA games that exist out there, many of them made by Nintendo. Guess what? That's why I'm making a Nintendo podcast, because they still got it, baby. But when I look at the space, when I look at the stuff that is being done with smaller games, and especially a lot of my taste, right, is side scrollers and that type of thing, and big companies don't make those types of games, so I'm always gonna side with the indie when it comes to that stuff. It's just more interesting and more variety.
Celeste and Hades don't count, by the way.
I'm pretty sure they do count. I'm pretty sure that's
no, because they're more than 3 to 5 people teams. That's the question.
Okay,
picking between like small indies or triple A's.
I guess Celeste was a 3 to 5 person team when it was made. I think that company now, Extremely OK Games, is much bigger now. But I'm pretty sure when it was
made,
it was
3 when
it was
made. Okay,
yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure. Okay. Or at least it wasn't that many because
there's a lot more people than that on that stage when they got the game award.
Well, yeah, who knows? You know, it could be. You know, who knows? Publishers. Stuff like that. No.
True.
But yes, I regardless of that, I was still, you know, okay. Hollow Knight Silk Song is coming out. I'm not gonna not play that. Fucking come on, man.
Yeah. With the caveat that, like, you know, 3 to 5 people maximum size of teams, as much as there are so many games I love in that genre and it's the more innovative side of the question, I would probably side with triple A's because I'm also a much bigger sucker for the big Sony first parties and MBZ is over here, so...
Yeah. Anyway, Disappointed.
Great question, Renee. Thanks very much for sending in.
Yeah.
Our next email is from Albert from Austria, who says, "Dear MBZ and Bally, I only found your podcast this year, but have somehow managed to listen to over half of the episodes already.
Oh, damn.
Thank you for many hours of entertainment and stimulating video game discussions. I often wonder how Nintendo will continue to evolve many of their staple franchises over the next decades. Take Smash Brothers, for example. The latest entry has literally been termed the ultimate Smash Brothers game. While I think it's possible in principle to keep adding characters and stages, I am not sure whether I'd personally be interested in buying Super Smash Bros. Ultimate 5 in the year 2035 with 260 characters and 390 stages. Similarly, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe and Pikmin 3 Deluxe seem like the logical conclusion of everything these games series could possibly offer in terms of mechanics. I struggle to see how these games could improve other than incrementally adding more content in future games. For me personally, it seems like my favorite franchises have reached a point of decreasing marginal utility if all they do from here on out is to scale existing formulas by adding more characters, courses, collectibles, etc. I'd be interested in hearing you how you two feel about this, as well as your thoughts on how Nintendo could possibly continue to evolve these franchises in ways that are refreshing and non-incremental. Thanks again for the laughs, Albert from Austria. Fun fact, I also studied at University of Aberdeen, just like Bally.
Oh, wow. So that's cool. Very fun. Appreciate Albert mentioning that you've gone back and listened to all the episodes.
Yeah.
Because that's something that I did with some of my favorite podcasts when I first started listening to podcasts. So hearing other people do that for ours is that makes me very happy. So
yeah,
I really do appreciate that. Interesting stuff here. I think that when it comes to these franchises and the changes they make, Nintendo always have this, there are two sides of the coin, right? Like, there's certain franchises that are in the experimental bucket, which I would put Kirby, I'd put Zelda, even Mario to some extent. Mario could go in two different buckets, right? Because like
3D Mario for sure, yeah.
3D Mario would go in the experimental bucket, whereas 2D Mario would go in the other one. But even then,
you'd put Mario Maker in the experimental one as well.
Exactly. Even then, 2D Mario got experimental with Mario Maker. So like, yeah. I think Mario is a harder one to do, but you know what I mean. Like, there are certain franchises you throw in that bucket, and the other bucket is like Pokemon, Animal Crossing, Mario Kart, right?
Like they have innovated in the past, but the last few have been a bit less innovative, you could argue. You know, it's a bit of both.
I think so. Yeah, I totally think so, right? Like, there's an interesting aspect to every game up until the 3DS, and then it kind of feels like the phoned in as gimmicks, almost, you know? Like, DS had mission mode, Double Dash was two players, the Wii had online for the first... Well, actually, no, it didn't. DS was online.
Yeah.
So I guess that we had the motorcycle stuff, which was somewhat interesting. But again, like it feels like there's less and less interesting going on as that franchise continues. And it just gets to this point where it's just like, it's a racing game that's Mario Kart, and it's got all the tracks, and we're adding all the characters. And, you know, maybe that's the end goal of like whatever Mario Kart 9 becomes. Is it Mario Kart Ultimate in the same way that Smash Brothers is? And it's just, here's everything from the entire series, and it's all in one, and enjoy. Because frankly, when you look at it, people buy that shit, right? Like, it's not like them doing anything different will necessarily improve their finances when it comes to those games, and especially like Animal Crossing.
Yeah,
Animal Crossing, I think this new one is the most innovative it's been in a while.
Yeah, definitely.
With, you know, the stuff they do with, you know, doing outside the whole island, all that stuff. But ultimately, it's still a very familiar game in a very familiar setting with similar stuff that hasn't updated. And I think a lot of people still frustrated with facts that it hasn't done. And the online is still garbage and all those elements. So how can they change these games, and what is it that the Zelda team and the Kirby team have that other parts of Nintendo don't, where they have this desire to do something different?
There's just this drive for innovation. And like, I'm sure in 1998, I think it was, when Ocarina of Time came out, was it 96, 98? Anyway, it was like, I think a lot of people absolutely loved that game. And I think people will have thought, how can Zelda ever be any better? And now here we are in 2021, I think people would laugh at that idea. You know, like, I think like we've seen so many iterations and reinventions of how Zelda can operate. Arguably the biggest revolution being Breath of the Wild, like the most recent 3D Zelda. Like, that is the fact that they can reinvent something that is still so beloved and can do something completely different. And this, I think, is something fairly unique to Nintendo versus the other AAAs, actually, where I think, sure, a series like God of War got a big, gritty reboot. Great. And I do think Nintendo need to be able to reboot more often than not. But, like, you compare that conversation to perhaps the Halo conversation that we're getting into with Infinite, and people are like, yeah, it's more Halo. It's looking good. It's been a while since we've had a good Halo game. Here we go. Mm-hmm. Halo. And it's like, Halo has been so iterative to a point where it's still a valuable property for Microsoft and Xbox, but it's just gone, it's become less valuable. And arguably that's been, in my opinion, because they haven't maybe made strides to reinvent it in a world where the first person shooter is evolving. So I think that Nintendo being as bold as they have been with 3D Mario and 3D Zelda especially, I think, is so refreshing and a breath of fresh air. And it is really, I would hope that they have it in them to be like, you know what, Pikmin needs a reboot. We need to completely rethink how Pikmin operates, how you get the Pikmin, what you're doing with those Pikmin in this world. Do you need this kind of Metroidvania style world that you knock down walls and it's gated, or is there a way of doing that completely differently? And if there was a developer I'd trust to do that, it would be Nintendo. Like, I think Pikmin is arguably due a reboot, and, you know, judging by the way that the motion controls work with 3, like, I'd love to see them think of something that might work a bit better with a, you know, a non-motion controls, like just a controller. So I think they do have it in them to reboot and innovate. I would just love to see them do it outside of 3D Zelda, 3D Mario. And like, I actually think we've talked about briefly, but like Smash Brothers, you know, start from scratch, start completely afresh.
I mean, what does ultimate mean aside from like the biggest and the best? Its literal meaning is the last.
The last.
Right? Penultimate means second to last, and ultimate means last, which is like, I think Sakurai's trying to tell Nintendo something with that. And that's, I feel like, why they're trying to squeeze as much out of this as possible. I think that man is done with this series. And I have no idea what they do after this. Like, frankly, I guess the thing with Smash Ultimate is all the stuff that we mostly care about in Smash Brothers, which is just playing with characters against each other on stages, is perfect. The rest of it, to be honest with you, not great, right? Like, it's, I think the single player content is pretty weak. I think that the lack of trophies, we talked about all this stuff in the past, but I think that like there's a better celebration of Nintendo and their franchises that you can make with Smash Brothers. Mm-hmm. And I think another game could do that so much better than fucking Spirits. I hate Spirits with a passion. I think they're the laziest fucking, like, man. And not to call like the developers lazy or anything, because Jesus Christ, the amount of work goes into those trophies, I'm sure, is just ridiculous. But I just hated Spirits so much.
And I'm skeptical of like series like Splatoon that was so fresh when it came out, 2015? And, you know, with Splatoon 3 is coming out next year, isn't it, right? Or tabled for next year.
It should be next year, yeah.
I'm getting worried Splatoon is not evolving enough on the formula. Sure, I think there'll be a couple of new modes, like there was Salmon Run in the last one, and that was cool. I enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. But you need something extra. Maybe Splatoon 3 will have that, and I look forward to see what it will have. But as it stands, it's kind of like, I wonder if they are playing. So that's gone into the safe bucket, when initially it was like definitely in the you know, revolutionary ideas kind of bucket. And I don't know, I want them to do the innovative ideas bucket more. And you're right, money talks.
Yeah, and in some senses, the innovative bucket idea just necessitates new ideas and new franchises. I think a lot of us have argued for years that, like, yes, Nintendo might not do new franchises all the time, new series, but they always change up their mainline series in significant ways, right? We talk about the Mario games and stuff, but it really is those few series that do that. I'd put Metroid probably in the experimental bucket as well when you look at the Prime series and Other M, and even I think every 2D Metroid is kind of different in their approach. You know, like the second, like Metroid 2 is a totally different game to what Super Metroid is, which is totally different to what Fusion is. And I don't know what they'll do with Dread, but you know, they did Federation Force and they did Other M. Like they've done, and you know, you can argue how good those approaches were. At least they were trying something different with those series and not just doing something completely the same all the time.
I think stuff like WarioWare is definitely in the creative bucket, you know, and like
and WarioWare is always like one of those franchises that it takes into account the hardware each time, and that's one of the things I like about Nintendo's hardware, because it's always so different. It means that a new WarioWare can then take that hardware and be like, all right, what's the weird gimmick we're going to do this time with it, and and really mess around with that.
It's very like Astro's Playroom logic to how you design a game is like, what cool things can we do with this hardware, and let's go from there kind of thing. And it's just like it's almost like that Japanese innovation idea that you see so often that's just so fundamental to Nintendo, and like it is ideas first. Like you think about ideas back with games like Star Fox Guard, where it was clearly an idea first and then they just shoehorned it into the Star Fox universe. Like they can just take ideas and shoehorn them into the franchises they're prepared to be a bit more creative with. And when you think about Nintendo across the piece, it does feel more like they are more innovative than they are safe. Like it feels more, numbers might prove differently, but it does feel more like through Animal Crossing America. Sure, they're safer, and sure, they're selling the. Those are two best-selling games.
They're also the two best-selling games on the system. So what does that say?
But I still think they're the exception, not the rule. Just about, and I think that is still very positive. And like, we got WarioWare coming out this year. We got Metroid Dread. You know, sure, Advance Wars is a very safe reboot and stuff like that. But I just think there is enough innovation there where I don't think this is a big issue. Although it's a big issue for certain franchises.
I think Fire Emblem is in the experimental bucket as well, to some senses. Like, it's always very familiar, but they're at least like trying to do something different with the setting and like the setup. And
even those three 3DS games, as much as they looked similar from an artistic perspective, they were mechanically so fundamentally different with the whole weapon degradation, and they reinvented the weapons triangle. Like, that's a fundamental part of Fire Emblem that they just reinvented kind of randomly, like for those games.
And then there's the remake as well of the old game, and that's like a totally bold different direction that series went in, much like the second iteration of lots of old games, right? That they just went off and did something super weird, and I really like Shadows of Valentia. It's excellent. It's cool when they do different stuff with their franchises. I wish they would do it all the time with everything, but we can't, you know, can't be expected for them to change things that sell. You know, you can't be expected to look at Mario Kart and say, well, what if they did something completely bizarre and off the wall that was a super massive risk for this franchise that is so bankable and safe that it just rolls money over the company nonstop.
Yeah, and like ultimately, Halo has gone, like the stock in Halo has fallen, and that has arguably been through the lack of innovation in it, and has because it's been so iterative. And the second, and we're nowhere near that phase yet, but the second that the hype level of a game like Animal Crossing or Mario Kart dips because of a lack of innovation, I think Nintendo will be fast to be like, right, we're reinventing it. You know, like I do think they have it in them to be like, again, with Pokemon, like the hype for Pokemon is not dying down, and that is preserving the fact that they are so iterative with that series. I mean, having said that, we've got Thingami Arceus coming out next year, which is like open world Pokemon.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
so
true.
Even Pokemon can be innovative and do wild things. I think they are aware of when they need to innovate, and they're very careful about when that happens, when it doesn't. But I have huge faith that we're not going to get any Halos in the Nintendo collection of franchises. Like they're aware of that.
I hope so. And like, you know, even with the 2D Mario, like the new Super series, which is just probably my least favorite version of this, it's just like...
It sucks. But they've not done one in a very long time. It's like they haven't heard us.
And exactly, and what they did do was they were like, well, what if you made the next new Super Mario Brothers game instead?
You think it's so great? You think it's so easy making 2D Mario?
Why don't
you do it?
Yeah, so who knows? I mean, I would, you know, I'd love for that series to get a real shot in the arm because it feels like it has been so rote.
I would absolutely love a 2D Mario that plays on the, what do you call it, like when you keep dying kind of platform.
Oh, like a Splatformer?
Splatformer, yeah. So like ideas from Meat Boy and Celeste, but play on that with a Nintendo injection of innovation, you know, like let's see what that could do with Mario.
100%, man, that would instantly be one of my most anticipated Nintendo games if they took lessons from those games.
Totally, and yeah, give it a crazy art style, you know, on top of that, you know, just do something very different with that formula, because boy, that those new Super Mario Brothers Mushroom Kingdom, here's the desert, now here's the ice, it's just just change it, need something new.
That is Nintendo's Halo, if ever there was one. Yes, Super Mario Brothers series. Like fucking hell, man.
Yes.
Oh, but then they sell 30 million copies. It's like, oh, why?
Yeah, I think did the Wii U port of new Super Mario Brothers on Switch.
It's, well, thankfully, it's now out of the top 10, beaten by Ring Fit Adventure, more unique and interesting innovative idea. So,
love seeing Ring Fit do well. Definitely in the innovation bucket. Like,
I need
one
to
of
buy
the
Ring
most
Fit.
Innovative games in that.
We
bucket.
Both need to buy Ring Fit, I think. Probably me more so than you, because I just need exercise.
I think that would make a fantastic long-term backlog club at some point.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think so. Let's do it at some point. But thanks for the question, Albert. I think it's really interesting to look at this stuff and think about like how they could change it up and all that stuff. Yeah. So, stuff.
Great question. But we do need more great questions. So please email thisnintendolife@gmail.com. That's thisnintendolife@gmail.com. That's all the emails we've got for this segment. MBZ, I think that's the end of the show.
I think it is. We just got to the end here. We're going to have a couple shows like this one and the next one, where it's a bit shorter because obviously Bally getting married, just has to throw a spanner in the works here. And so we're recording stuff a bit early again. But yes, as you've mentioned, Bally, you can't wait until September is here so you can just chill and not have to worry about shit anymore.
Yeah. Have a little less on my plate. I can really focus on some games and, you know, not so much busyness, which will be nice. And I'll be married. Even better.
Yeah, exactly. That'll be good. So that we could do a lot more regular episodes and talk about stuff. So yes, look forward to that. But in the meantime, bit shorter stuff, but condensed. But yes, you can still find us in all the places that we usually are on the internet. We'll keep you abreast of situations and what's going up and what's happening, such as twitter.com, where you can follow the podcast at TNLpodcast. You can find me at LordNBZ on Twitter. Where, Bally, can they find you?
I'm on Twitter at Ballyman91. That's BALLY. Did I say that right? BALLYMAN91. And I must say, MBZ's got a hot take. He is 100% convinced GTA 6 will be coming out after Mario Kart 9.
It's just going to happen.
It's going to happen. I mean, how many years gap is there going to be between GTA 6 and Mario Kart 9?
Look, man. They're putting GTA 5 on the new consoles at the end of this year. So that speaks... Well, basically, it all came around because there's a rumor that they're going to remaster the PS2 GTA games and that those will come to Switch. Sounds pretty cool. Honestly, I think that's a pretty cool thing.
Interested how much of a glow up they get or not. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see. Man, if there is one company who... does not need to do shit and yet will just rank up money, it is Rockstar right now with GTA Online. They don't need to lift a fucking finger, man. Given how long it took Red Dead, I think the real interesting question, GTA 6 or Elder Scrolls 6? That's the real competition. Because I think that Elder Scrolls 6 is going to be...
Well, you think Mario Kart 9 is coming before all of this?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Starfield will come before Mario Kart 9,
yes,
I think.
Yes,
that's
true. You heard it here first.
Mario Kart 9's got to happen, man. It's happened. At least a new Mario Kart. It's got to happen. I just feel it in my bones. Nintendo are not just going to leave that.
When's it going to be announced?
Middle of next year.
Okay.
Middle of 22. Comes out 23, start of 23, March 23.
Okay. Yeah, that would be hot, and that would definitely be before GTA 6.
Yes, it would be. Cool. So, yes, you can find us on Twitter. You can also find us all over the internet. If you want to download the show, we're on Spotify, we're on Stitcher, we are on all the places that you can download podcasts. If it's an app that you can download a podcast to, you just search for This Nintendo Life, subscribe to us, and then you get all the episodes without missing a thing. They all automatically go to your phone, and it's like, oh, wow, new episode, that's fun. And yeah, it's a good time. You can review us, of course, on there. Still don't think we had a review for 2021, Bally. People need to get on it.
Who wants
getting
to be the
close
first?
To the end of this year. Will you do a review for 21?
We'll give you a huge shout out on the show. We hugely appreciate it. Yeah. And Apple Podcasts. That's the place to be. That's where you need to go.
Yep. That's what you need to do. And yes, we obviously also have a Patreon where you can support us and get bonus episodes where we talk about different video games. And you can go over there. Patreon.com/ThisNintendoLife. If you would so choose to do. And we have to thank some people, Bally, for being so kind in supporting us.
Yes, thank you to all of our patrons, but a big thank you to our $10 tier patrons. I'd like to thank Zach S., Atari Alex, Thomas, Matthew, and at the time of recording, my fiance, Caroline.
Yes, yes. And yes, we obviously have our Discord server as well that you can go and check out and join. The link is always there in the show notes, as well as on the YouTube video. We have the YouTube channel that you can go and watch the version on there, although there's never any images. It's just a screen with our logo on it, but you can put it in a tab if you prefer listening on YouTube. That is also an option for you. So yeah, don't plug those too much, but Discord and YouTube, both places that we are present on the internet, that you can go and check us out if you did not know that. And I think, Bally, that is gonna do us for the show. So yeah, that's it. It's I'm interested in that Pokemon Arceus game. We're gonna get a presentation on that soon.
I just hope it runs half decently, you know, like a smooth 30 will do me fine, but need that smoothness.
All those people who are like, don't worry, guys, Switch Pro's coming, it'll be fine.
where are you now?
Yeah, where are you now, man? I'm less confident in that game as a result of that. But but anyway, we've got way too many fucking video games to play, so I'm going to go play some and get on out of here. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you in a couple of weeks' time with another episode of this show. Until then, thank you for listening, and we'll see you very soon. Bye-bye, folks. The musical interlude used on today's show was School Grounds from Dodgeball Academia. Copyright Pocket Trap 2021. I think that's the first time you've forgotten claps and I've had to remind you. In the history.
I hadn't forgotten. I hadn't pressed record yet. I hadn't.
Okay, all right. Check I thought you said tape. Ready. I thought you were saying ready as in you're about to launch into it. I was like,
I did use the same ready. That is very fair. I said ready. Yeah. You're like, I'm going to three.
See, exactly. Yeah, see what I mean?